Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are, this week. Happy Earth Day to you. I'd sing it, but then I'd have to pay royalties and you'd have to hear me sing. It's been 40 years since the first one, and I'm happy to say I remember it. And we've made such progress. Franklin Graham, son of Billy Graham, was disinvited from the National Day of Prayer breakfast at the Pentagon because of remarks he'd made about Islam being a violent religion. Two questions. Why is the government involved in a prayer event? And did Graham ever look at the history of Christianity? I'm just asking. Microsoft's income has gone up 35% over last year's, suggesting a recovery in technology purchases. Apparently, the stimulus isn't working. In the same arena, after 3 months of decline, sales of existing housing went up 7% last month, and new jobless claims are down. Also, new home inventories are at their lowest point since 1971, and wholesale prices, including oil and food, were up only 0.7%, but only 0.1% when you exclude those two volatile items. So there's no immediate risk of inflation. I just wish the Democrats could manage the darned economy. An investigation by the federal government has revealed that two health insurance companies targeted women who contracted breast cancer for cancellation of their insurance and utilized intensive investigative techniques to try to find a reason the policies could be said to have been obtained by fraud. The companies were Assurant and WellPoint. At least they didn't tell their policyholders that they were in good hands. United Airlines and U.S. Airways have ended their merger talks, and each one is offering the other their rights to fly over Iceland. Okay, we're going to try this one again, slightly differently. Governor Charlie Crist of Florida, who continues to poll poorly against his intra-party rival Marco Rubio, is trying to figure out a way of winning the Senate seat for himself. He's cleverly thinking of running as an independent. This is after he intelligently declined an offer to run as McCain's running mate in 2008, which worked out well for Crist. This could be said to be the second coming of Crist. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird. Our guest is a writer, Deanna Day, who's published a novel and is working on a nonfiction book, and we'll talk about her other writing as well. But first, I wanted to talk to you about something that's free. That's right, I did say free. I didn't say a free gift because I try not to sound too much like an idiot too often. We're doing a weekly Speaking of Everything newsletter. If you'd like it delivered to your email box, email me. The address is jb720@cox.net. JB, that's my initials and also sounds like a scotch. jb720@cox.net. As long as I don't give it up or forget to do it, we'll be sending it out every week. Again, it's jb720@cox.net for the Speaking of Everything weekly newsletter. A little bit different from Weekly Reader, but that's okay. Also, if you have a website for your business and you aren't blogging, you're missing the best thing you can do to drive eyeballs to your website and chase dollars to your bottom line. You can do it yourself for free, or you can have a professional writer do your blogging for you for under $100 a month. Go to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and read all about the process and how it works. And again, it's jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. Let's talk about some of those issues that we mentioned earlier. But before we do that, I wanted to invite your calls. If you care to join us and talk about any of the things we've talked about in weeks past or that you just want to bring up that has to do with politics, economics, almost anything else, please feel free to call us. It's 347-994-3796, and I'll repeat it for those of you whose pen is not working, 347-994-3796. Talking about those stories, Earth Day. The first one occurred 40 years ago, and at that time I was at a college radio station, perhaps the youngest member there, but I was there and was doing the news, and before it had become a cliche, I said, Happy Earth Day to you. for what it's worth. But that was an obviously long, long time ago. Many of the people listening to this show were not born when that happened. And as indicated, I wasn't very old myself. But the thing is, in those 40 years, if you think about what's happened, primarily what the concern was 40 years ago were things like air pollution and water pollution. Later, people began to get concerned about noise pollution, but that's never been as big a deal for most people as the other items. And, of course, now, in recent years, we first talked about global warming, qua global warming, and now we're talking about climate change more generally. The columnist for the New York Times, Thomas Friedman, who's written a book regarding both business and climate, has said that you really shouldn't call what's going on global warming. It's really more global weirding, in the sense that in some places, of course, it will get warmer and has gotten warmer, and in others it'll get colder, and it'll also be a situation where there are more storms in places where there weren't before, and there will be more wildfires as a result of certain drier conditions because of less rain as a result of the warming, or less snow, depending on where you are. And the fact is, a lot of that has taken place. It's difficult to make a judgment from one year to the next because that can be an anomaly, a blip, if you will. And then there would be theoretically what's called in economics and in math, what's called reversion to the mean. In other words, if the average daily temperature during a certain month is 80 degrees, and this year the average daily temperature is 85 degrees, the likelihood is that next year, under the theory of reversion to the mean, that next year, that month, will be cooler than the average temperature of 80 degrees. Whether or not it's actually down to 75 to make it completely even in terms of the averages. But what's happening is not that. What's happening is that in some places, as said, there are temperature changes. Spring is occurring earlier in many places than it did, say, a decade or two ago. And that has created reasons for concern. There are changes in plant behavior as well as animal behavior, and that could have a seriously devastating effect. So global warming or climate change is real. The only debate that exists anymore among responsible scientists and non-scientific smart people, if you will, intellects, is whether the climate change is caused either exclusively or primarily by humans. Many people think it is. Whether it is or not, however, doesn't change the fact that it is happening and it's not good for people and other living things. And the question becomes, okay, if you accept that as a basic premise, what do you do about it? What can be done about it? Well, this is a day when that's being discussed all over the planet, and presumably on other planets, but it is being discussed, and the reality is nobody knows that everything that can and should be done. And there is a streak of thought that exists in the country, as many of you know, where people say, oh, global warming, that's nonsense, it's not real, no one's proven it's real, people have come back on that, there are scientists who say it's not real. Yeah, you can get a scientist to say that facts are different from what science shows, just as you can get an African-American Supreme Court justice who got through school as a result of affirmative action, at least in part, being against affirmative action for others. You can have Jewish anti-Semites and every other ridiculous possibility that would seem to be oxymoronic in practice. But almost all scientists and all responsible ones will acknowledge that climate's changing. The question is what I said before. And the reason that the folks who don't believe in climate change say that it's not real is twofold. First off, they don't want to take any action. They don't want to do anything that would in some fashion discomfort them or their friends or what they perceive to be our economy. And the other reason is that they would hate to admit that Al Gore could ever be right about anything. your thoughts, feel free to join us if you wish to at 347-994-3796. Franklin Graham has been asked to not attend the National Day of Prayer Breakfast for the that's going to be at the Pentagon, because the prayer breakfast is supposed to be an all-faith affair, so to speak. People of all religions coming together in interfaith tranquility. Isn't that nice? And it's happening at the Department of Defense. There is a real serious question as to whether this should even occur. In fact, a federal court last week ruled that the government issuing a proclamation or participating in any fashion in the National Day of Prayer is a violation of the United States Constitution. Presumably, that's because the judge who made the ruling actually read the Constitution and understands the concept of a separation of church or religion and state or government. That's there. And you can certainly say that the wording in the Constitution doesn't say that specifically, and that's true. The Constitution doesn't say specifically that private gun ownership is okay, but the same people who talk about the separation of church and state being nonsensical because it's not specifically said in the Constitution don't have any problem, as a rule, talking about private gun ownership being guaranteed by the essence of the Second Amendment. I think they're right about the Second Amendment, and I think they're wrong about the First Amendment's separation of religion and government. So this judge made the ruling, and the Obama administration, unfortunately, today announced that they are going to be appealing that decision of the federal court. So they are favoring religion, forgive me, over the Constitution. Tech spending is up, housing is up, automobiles are up. General Motors is paying back the full amount of the loan that the federal government granted to it 5 years ahead of schedule. That's because they've been able to, by reason of those loans, they were able to shore up their product, their assembly line, reduce their product offerings, and close dealerships, and become, dare we say it, profitable. Now, there are many people, as you know, who said that they should have just been left to file bankruptcy and go under if necessary. That would have cost nearly 300,000 jobs in this country. More to the point, they've now demonstrated, now that they were in fact bailed out, that they can operate as a profitable company. And the fact is, automobiles and housing are the two biggest drivers of our country's economic health. And if you let those two industries go down, then the economy at large is going to be badly damaged. Well, in fact, both of those did suffer in the recent Great Recession, and now they've both begun to come back. Housing less vigorously, but it is coming back, and part of the reason is the stimulus, certainly, because when money goes into the economy, what happens is more people have money to buy cars. When it comes to housing, there may be a reduction in the improvement in the housing market in the days ahead because a number of inexpensive foreclosure houses are going to hit the market. When that happens, the sales of other housing is less likely to occur because the foreclosures will be less expensive and more available and so on. It's still, by the way, a great time to buy a house. If you're considering buying a house, don't wait too long. You'll look back at this period of time and say, man, I really wish I would have done that. Every generation goes through that where at a later time than they could have bought more cheaply, they regret not having done so. So for what it's worth, if you don't own a home and are considering buying one, this would not be a bad time. Likewise, it wouldn't be a bad time to buy a home that's been wrecked because people moved out in anticipation of foreclosure or because they were quote-unquote underwater in terms of the house's cost. There's a lot of housing stock out there, and you can buy it, assuming you can afford to make the payments, and fix it. You will do well. How quickly you'll do well, I can't tell you, but you will, in fact, do well. The two health insurance companies who specifically targeted women who made claims for breast cancer is, of course, a horror. It would have been better if this had come out prior to the health care bill having been drafted. There would have been a greater possibility we would now have single payer and have the health insurance companies out of the market. There are so many other fields that they could do well in. Health insurance is not one they should be in my opinion. And this is just one more story. These keep coming out about companies that are denying coverage or trying to cancel coverage for those women who make a breast cancer claim. Insurance companies rather who are denying people their claims when they have legitimate health issues that are supposed to be covered under the contract. Time and time again it happens. And you can understand the health insurance companies on one hand. The fact is, they're not there to be altruistic companies. They're there to make a profit. That's one of the reasons we shouldn't have private companies running health insurance, because their motivation is profit. If we were talking about a single payer, whether you call it government or somebody else, their motivation is not to make profit. Arguably, that's one of the problems with government, but at least your health care would be paid for. And even with the health care bill that was passed, most of us will be paying out money for health insurance. Want to cover some of the news of the weird, which we get from the website, newsoftheweird.com, and their newer site, newsoftheweird.blogspot.com. And since I made a typing error when I went to the site recently, let me advise you, not so much that you're a bad typist, but in the event you're not a good speller, weird is an exception to the rule about I before E. It is the E before the I. So it's W-E-I-R-D. In any event, we're going to talk about some of the news that News of the Weird had. And here's one that's kind of an old type of story, but the excuse that the guy gave was a little new. Someone who was arrested for burglary was stuck in a vent at a convenience store overnight. When it opened the next morning and the police came, he told them he wasn't doing anything wrong. He wasn't trying to commit a burglary. Oh, no. He had been playing hide-and-seek with his friends, and evidently he won because they all quit and went home and left him there. So he wasn't really doing anything wrong. This is a story that is not funny but is peculiar. In my judgment, it's not funny. A 34-year-old woman was convicted in Nevada of forcing a 13-year-old boy to fondle her breasts. Now, that's peculiar and odd and all the rest of it, but here's the weird part. This was in Nevada, in Elko, or its surrounding area. She was sentenced to life in prison for that. Life in prison because she allegedly forced a 13-year-old boy to fondle her breasts. And I say allegedly, not because she wasn't convicted. She was convicted, so as a matter of law, she did it. But she claimed that she had gotten drunk and didn't remember. That's possible, okay? But let's assume it's not. Let's assume she actually committed the crime knowingly. As horrible is that worth life in prison? Now, she may get out in 10 years because she could be put on parole. And if she is, she'll experience what many men have experienced, and a few women, and that is she will be determined to be a sex offender. And if that ever happens to you, in some states, I just learned this recently, if you are convicted and it's a sexual crime, you are required, when you move someplace, not only do the police know it, which is perfectly okay, and could your neighbors find it by going to a website, but before you move in, or as you move in this state, they actually put out flyers to everybody in the neighborhood, telling them, one, that a sexual offender is moving into the neighborhood, and two, who you are and where you live. And this is after you've served your term or you're on probation or whatever it is. You may think that's a wonderful thing. I don't know. And if you do, please call me and talk to us at 347-994-3796. I will tell you that certainly nobody favors child predators and people who commit rapes, but even outside of that, someone can be declared a sexual offender. I spoke to a gentleman who told me, and again, I don't know if it's true, but I believe him. He said what he did was he was depressed, and he made some kind of obnoxious comment to a child. He acknowledges that. It was a humorous, his intention was to be humorous, and it was merely stupid and obnoxious. And it was sexually oriented, but he really, it's not like he was trying to seduce her or persuade her to go to bed with him, and he never touched her, none of that. Still, she went to her parents, which is understandable, and they complained to the police, again, understandable. But he was charged, and he pled guilty to what he was charged with. He, the rest of his life, must have the landlord, the neighbors, everybody around him, his employer, has to be notified that he is a sexual offender. He is in the same category, therefore, as some guy who committed a much, you know, more horrible crime. I mean, I'm glad he didn't do a more horrible crime, assuming he did not. But if some jerk commits rape upon a child, that's terrible, and we can talk about what a fitting punishment might be. But this, but even if you don't do that, and irrespective of whether this person was telling me the truth or not, the fact is that anybody who does that, you are forever branded. And it's not just branded. You, everybody around you knows it, and they get flyers to tell them you're there. In any event, getting back to the story of the 34-year-old woman, she may get out in 10 years on parole, but she is going to be in that same situation, branded, and everybody is going to know that she is some kind of sexual criminal. They may not tell what she is convicted of doing, but they will let everybody know that she is that. Another odd story, which also involves the law. And by the way, we're about 3 or 4 minutes away from being joined by Deanna Day, who is supposed to join us at about 5 minutes before the hour. And by the way, if you are listening to our show in its archive form at the Blog Talk Radio /Jeff-Bushman, let me invite you to listen to us live, to the extent we are alive, on Thursday evenings at 7:30 Pacific time. It is not now 7:30 Pacific, it's about 7:50, but we are on from 7:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Pacific, 3 hours later in the East, and I'll let you figure out the rest of the time zones. In any event, please feel free to join us live and call in if you wish to, should you be listening in archive edition. Going back to the news of the weird, the U.S. Army had a soldier who was convicted of two murders by a court in North Carolina in 1986. And what occurred after that, he was sentenced to die, but he filed an appeal. And finally, after the appeal was granted and he was retried, he was acquitted. Unfortunately, the Army called him back into service. He was redrafted, essentially. They have the right to bring you back in. There's no draft. But if you join and then you are out, they have a right to bring you back in. I don't know exactly how that works, but that's apparently the case. And they tried him for the murders that he had been essentially acquitted of. And the military can do that. There's an exception if the military tries you to. There's an exception to the double jeopardy rule, and they convicted him. And now he is sentenced to die. New species of leech. This is the animal, not the guy who borrows money from you. A new species of leech was found in Peru. It's notable because it has fangs and prefers to hang out in your nose. And it is also noted for its, as they said it, quote, extremely small genitalia. That combination makes it sound like some users of cocaine. But, you know, maybe not. Anyway, that's what we're talking about. And I also wanted to take the opportunity to tell you that a book I wrote on the subject of investment in mobile homes for the small investor is both available for your review in the sense of reading an excerpt online. And if you wish to purchase it, it's available there as well. You can read that excerpt from the book Mobile Millionaire, and the location on the web is mobilemillionaire.blogspot.com. As said, the book deals with investing in mobile homes and how you can do it with little or no money. You literally can do it, by the way, with no money. And it is designed to tell you how you can create a cash flow and have essentially setting up your own retirement eventually with it. In any event, that's the story there. Next week we have another author on who's going to tell us, yes, even though it's April, about the Christmas snowflake. And then on May the 6th, we are scheduled to have a return visit from our semi-regular guest, Larry Hancock. And I know that those of you who have heard him before will tune back in because he's almost endlessly fascinating, or his subject is, or both. And we're going to be talking some more about the killing of Robert Kennedy, Senator Robert Kennedy, in June of 1968. So that's what that's going to be about. So I hope you can join us then. Meantime, while we're waiting for Deanna Day to join us, you can call us at 347-994-3796. But now, actually, we're probably going to bring her on, and you can listen, and then you can call in and ask questions of both of us. Deanna, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
So far, so good. Knock on wood.
Very good. Happy Earth Day.
Yes, a happy Earth Day to you.
Oh, thank you.
I was going to say, fortunately, I'm sitting at a wooden desk, so I could actually knock on wood. It worked out very well.
Oh, well, that is good.
Yeah.
I'm sitting
otherwise,
on a wooden chair. I'll knock on that.
All right. Thank you. That's good. That's good. We'll participate in that. Let me introduce you. Deanna Day is a writer and the author of an award-winning novel called Kindergarten Karma. And she's been writing fiction for substantially longer than that. And we're going to talk to her about those things and about writing generally and publishing. And she's also working on some other things that she'll also talk to us about. First off, talk to us about Kindergarten Karma.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a novel that I self-published in the year 2000, and I sent it off to one contest, and I happened to win.
Wow.
It was the Writer's Digest National Self-Published Book Awards for the year 2000. It won the Mainstream Fiction Award. It's a story about a fellow named Felix who's a sort of a down-and-out handyman in Kansas. It's a suspense tale. He's a man that doesn't see very well because his eyes were injured badly by the schoolyard bully when he was in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And now as an adult, that same schoolyard bully has grown up and is now quite a sadist and has threatened his own son. So the police are not helping, so he decides that even though he's an ethical, moral, decent man, he's going to take the law into his own hands and protect his son by committing murder.
That is interesting. And much suspense ensues, basically, right?
Well, yes.
Yeah, that's great. I frankly didn't know Writer's Digest had that kind of contest. I haven't read the magazine in a number of years, but for everybody else, let me add, Writer's Digest is a national publication, as the title suggests. It's primarily designed to assist writers in improving their writing and getting their writing published. Have I left anything out?
Yes, that's quite correct. They have a monthly magazine, and they've also published many books on the
mm-hmm.
craft of writing well.
Right, and they also publish a book anybody who writes and wants to submit for publication should get, called Writer's Market.
Oh, they publish Writer's Market as well? I have.
Oh,
that.
I thought you knew that, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good,
yeah, that's,
okay.
That's a publication of Writer's Digest books.
They
also have a number of other publications, by the way. I'm trying to remember. There's a fiction book they put out in addiction to the regular one, and I can't even remember all the things. I mean, you have mentioned the fact that they have written or published a number of books involving improving your craft,
yeah.
But there's also a number of specific marketing tools they put out so that if you are writing and you wish to be published in magazines or by book publishers, those books are designed to aid you. And
absolutely, and they're usually very, very well written. Most of their books
mm-hmm.
are extremely good. And I had actually read quite a few of them, and because I guess it was 1992 when I discovered I absolutely love writing fiction. That
mm-hmm.
never occurred to me that I would like it, because in college I absolutely detested writing term papers, nonfiction. So
mm-hmm.
So it came as a big surprise when I discovered I liked writing fiction. And
what generated the effort to write fiction that made you discover you enjoyed it?
Well, actually, the very first time I ever wrote any fiction was when I was teaching English as a second language in Taiwan long ago. And I had one class of advanced students who had nothing to read, and it was basically a conversational class, and their English was all excellent, and I just wasn't sure if their reading was quite excellent or not, and we really had nothing to read. So I wrote a story, and it was a tremendous amount of fun. And they enjoyed it, even though it had been written on a typewriter and it was full of typos. And I was surprised they could even read it. There were so many typos. But it was just, I felt elated while I was writing fiction. And so that was, I guess, the first time.
That's great. So then you wrote the novel, and you decided to self-publish. Is there a specific reason you decided to self-publish?
Well, I had also been looking at publishers and not getting much response, contacting agents and publishers. And I had heard other writers talking, being in writing groups. And I'd also read that if you're not already a celebrity, publishers aren't really that much interested in you these days. We were already in a recession, and times were tough, and the publishing industry was already charging a pretty high price for their books, and I think their sales were probably down. And so the publishing industry just seemed like a mess.
Yeah.
So I took a seminar. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and they have something called the Learning Annex. They have quite a few seminars. And I took a seminar in how to self-publish and got a little booklet on it and decided I could do it. And so I also got to design the cover and put one of my own typos on the very back in the blurb, foolishly, the error that slips through. And, it was just a tremendous amount of fun. And so I just went ahead and did it. I self-published.
That's great. And how did you sell the book? Or how do you sell the book? I assume you're still doing it.
That really is the hardest part, I think. Friends bought it, which was very nice, and book clubs now and then, and I would offer to appear at the book club. And I sold it on Amazon. And it's out of print now, but there are still some remainder copies in my garage and a couple used copies on Amazon.
Sure.
It was published in the year 2000, and the Writer's Digest National Magazine, they had an article on all their winners August of 2001 in their magazine. And unfortunately, of course, as everyone knows, a month later 9/11 happened, and no one was interested in new writers at all, or so many other things,
Right.
So it really was a bad time to be in that position.
Sure. What I was going to ask you is the book itself is is there any reason why you wouldn't? I mean, I guess it might not be economically viable. I mean, you can tell me, but I mean, is there any other reason that one who has self-published would not just go ahead and go through a second printing if the book essentially sold out?
Oh, absolutely. That's a good idea. That book is, I think, a little bit dated now.
Okay.
And I actually learned a little bit about not putting in certain elements that do show a story's age. And
right.
So
I'll tell you something funny in a minute. Go ahead.
Well, okay. And since it did take me quite a while to sell the first edition, I just didn't feel that there was much point in doing a second edition. However, now I'm planning to release it as an e-book along with several of the other novels that I've written. And I'm working on my very first nonfiction book. The topic seemed so important that I just felt that I had to go ahead and turn to nonfiction, even though I prefer fiction a great deal more.
What is the subject of the nonfiction book you're working on, if you don't mind telling us?
Oh, not at all. It's this thing called HCG. It's a new form of weight loss not many people
right.
have heard it. It's a chemical, it's a hormone that's naturally produced that actually allows the body to access fat stores that aren't normally accessible during a diet and release those into the body so that all those calories are flooding your system and the nutrients that are stored with the fat. And so you can eat a very low-calorie diet and lose a half a pound to a pound a day. Now, I've been at it for 3 months. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you were saying that the HCD is produced in the body. It's produced in the body, essentially, of pregnant women.
Right? Oh, yeah, I'm glad you're familiar with it. Yes, it is a natural substance.
Yeah, that's right. Watch this. Are you ready? Human chorionic gonadotropin.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Most people can't pronounce it, even if they do know what the words are.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. I happened to have a neighbor who had lost 22 pounds in the first 14 days, and I was overweight myself. And apparently there's a big connection between obesity and some of the chemicals in our food, particularly MSG.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so by eliminating MSG from the diet, I think that probably also helps with the weight loss. But MSG actually causes damage to part of the brain called the hypothalamus that just sort of disables our ability to realize when we're full, and also seems to have kind of an addictive quality in that you start craving foods that have MSG in it.
Mm-hmm. There's some evidence to suggest it might be carcinogenic.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, that's been talked about for years. But go ahead. Go ahead with what you were saying about HCG in the book. So that's what the book is.
Okay.
That's what the book is.
That's what my new book is about. Right. And
that's
I'm going to go ahead and publish that as an ebook. Now, what I've done is I've looked at the different ways that people take HCG. I've been using it myself for about 3 months, and I've lost 42 pounds. So in 90 days, 42 pounds, that's pretty darn good. I'm happy about that. And I think the whole world needs to know about this. They really do. They need to get away from the MSG and start taking the HCG and really fix their bodies, give up the diabetes and all of the things that go with it.
Let me ask you a question. You mentioned the different ways people are taking it, and I didn't know where our conversation was going to take this direction, but it may as well, right?
Okay.
The HCG, when I'm aware of the fact that there are some medical practitioners who do injections initially and then people inject themselves with the HCG. Is that how you're taking it, or are you taking it in some other form?
No, I'm taking it in some other form. I guess there are four ways that people are taking it. One is by subcutaneous injection.
Mm-hmm.
Another is by intramuscular injection.
Right.
And the third way that I'm using is taking HCG sublingually, orally.
Mm-hmm.
Basically,
mm-hmm.
you put it in your mouth and you hold it under your tongue for a little while, and then it goes directly into the veins under your tongue, directly into your bloodstream.
Right.
And the fourth way is using homeopathic HCG, which my research suggests that is not effective in all cases. About 30% of people have no weight loss at all with that. And even if you do lose weight, it's not as much as using the regular HCG.
Okay, so when you're taking the HCG sublingually, you've been doing that and you've been dropping pounds.
Yeah.
Have you done anything else? And let me back this up by saying the people I know who were taking it by way of injecting it under their skin or maybe it was IM. Maybe it was intramuscularly. I don't know. It was probably because they were talking about getting a shot on the backside. So I'm assuming that was intramuscularly. Yeah. Anyway, when they were doing it, they were also on. When I say weird, I don't mean there was anything wrong with it, but they were on a temporary weird eating regimen.
While
they were getting the shots. Okay, so when you're doing it sublingually, are you also affecting what you're eating in some fashion?
Yes. Okay. See, because the HCG is flooding your body with tons of calories from your stored fat cells, you don't need to eat very much, but you do need to eat protein, just as in a protein-sparing fast, because you don't want to lose any muscle tissue. You only want to lose the fat tissue. So you must continue eating a certain amount of protein. And it's also required that you continue eating low-calorie vegetables, like green beans and salad and spinach and really healthy vegetables. Mm-hmm. And also 2 fruit a day. So it's not a low-carb diet because, you know, if you're eating 2 apples a day, that's kind of high carb. And but you're eating no fat, and you're eating basically, it's called a VLCD, very low-calorie diet, and it's 500 calories a day. And the rest of the calories that you need is all coming out of your fat cells, exactly what you want.
And in terms of that, you stay, if anyone's interested in knowing this, you stay on that very low-calorie diet while you're taking the HCG for about how long?
For about 40 days.
Oh, 40 really? Days. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then you take a break, and then you, if you have more weight that you need to lose, then you do it again. Now, the fellow who came up with this diet is Dr. Simeons, and he self-published a book on it in 1971, and shortly thereafter, he died rather mysteriously. So that was all. That's all kind of odd. If you've ever heard of,
hopefully it wasn't from the diet.
Oh no! He died in his sleep. No, people speculate that he was murdered because of revealing the diet. Actually, so it's kind of a mystery. One of Kevin Trudeau's books is based in part on the Simeons HCG protocol.
I see.
And he spliced to it. He added to it his own cleansing program that he had previously released as an audiobook, and put the two together and claimed it was an effective diet. So,
okay.
I'm not the first to write
on
this topic.
You're not making any. Yeah. Oh no, I understand that, and you're obviously not making any judgment about that. You're just saying that, you know, that he did something separately from that.
Yes.
From the HCG, right?
He combined the HCG diet with his own diet, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now let me ask you: the books you are offering as e-books, you're publishing, self-publishing as e-books, are those already on the web available for people, or on Amazon yet, or are you just in terms of your prior novels? Or are you just setting that up at this point?
I'm just setting it up. I've been researching it, and it's a lot more complicated than I realized to be selling downloads on the Internet. And so I'm working on that, and I thought it was going to be done by now, but it isn't. My goal is to have the HCG book published and available by late May.
That's great.
And,
well, first off, let me invite you back when you have that and your other books up on the web. So
wonderful.
Can, of course, cover some of those more and let people know that it is available.
That would be great.
That way both of the people in my audience can buy it. But
I like your show a lot, actually. Your news is weird.
You. Yeah, well, I don't create those. Occasionally, I put comments on the end of it, but those actually come from someone else, obviously, newsoftheweird.com.
Wow.
Yeah.
Strange stories today, I'll tell you.
There certainly were.
Covered today.
No question. The other fiction you've done, what other kinds of books have you written besides Kindergarten Karma?
Okay, well, I've written a few. Murder mysteries, woman private eye type thing.
Great. Like a Warshawski or Sue Grafton's books.
Sort of. So I've written some of those, and those have never been published and never offered yet, even to publishers. Mm-hmm. So they're not known at all. Very few people have read them. And also I've written a couple of books that are called Magical Realism or Magic Realism. And that's basically
And I don't know what it is. Tell us, please.
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, if you ever watched the TV show Medium or Ghost Whisperer, those are considered magic realism because they're a combination of reality plus some magical element, like being able to see ghosts. which,
okay,
you know, or let's see, being able to move through time, you know,
mm-hmm.
any show like that is considered magical realism.
Okay.
I wrote one called Love is Magic. That's probably my favorite. It's about a guy who's about to become a CEO of a huge corporation when his mother dies. Now, this is a self-made man who, you know, raised himself up by his own bootstraps and had always been embarrassed by the fact that his mother was a fortune teller. And he always had assumed that she was a charlatan. And then when she passes away, he inherits a gemstone that enables him to see ghouls and demons and fairies and the whole world of magical creatures. And so his life veers in a very new direction.
Wow. That sounds very interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Oh, people who've read it have really enjoyed it very much. It's this man and his daughter go on. He also inherits a list of names from his grandmother, and he has no idea why. So he and his daughter set out to meet all of the people on the list. And each one of them, each person that he meets, tells a story about how his mother had changed their life dramatically through her magical powers. And so in this way, he learns what magical powers there are.
Right.
So there is
That is interesting because most people's mothers only, you know, ruin their own lives.
Oh, Father.
Okay, there you go. Are you writing full time?
Yes.
What you do, or are you also
writing and editing. Writing and editing.
Okay, great. Okay, so when you're talking about editing as part of your work, you're talking about editing the work of others.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, writing involves editing your own work, but the film,
what I thought
was the humorous, in a peculiar way, story I was going to allude to before when you were talking about trying not to write something that will have the effect of dating your work.
Oh, yes.
A number of years ago, I tried to write a novel and it ended up being way too short. And I really didn't do anything with it because I realized it was more of an exercise to see what I could do than it was something that was really good enough to be published. But one of the things that I put in there was, and it was a murder mystery creating a Perry Mason type of character, including as a Paul Drake-like assistant, right?
Yeah, Paul Drake's private eye.
As the key to the conclusion of the novel has this assistant who can't get through to him on the phone sending him a beeper message in numeric code. And obviously nobody uses beepers anymore. And it was just shortly after I wrote that in fact beepers went the way of the horse and buggy. But
you could switch it to a text message.
When you talk about something being dated, that's what occurred to me. It's very clearly not an evergreen. It had its... It had its very limited shelf life, if it would have ever had any, by reason of that. Clearly, that
would
be deeper.
But, Jeff, you could quite easily.
Deeper. My God, what happened to cell phones?
Jeff, you could change it to a text message.
So as times and technology change, if you have something in a work that relies on old technology, you obviously have a problem.
Well, I think it would be easy for you to update
Are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Diana?
Yes?
Hello.
Hello.
Okay.
Jeff, I can hear you.
You're there. Hang on. Let me just try and bring you back up here. Are you there? Are you with us? Okay. I think we lost her. One second.
Oh, dear.
Try again. Diana, are you there? Going once.
Jeff, I can hear you.
Yeah. There you
go. I can hear you.
Are you there now?
I can hear you.
Okay, now you're back with us. I can hear you.
Okay. I never lost you. I could hear you at all times.
Okay. Well, you're breaking up a little bit. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
You're breaking up. Are you on a cell phone?
I am. I'll move around a little. I'll pick
That's
a new spot.
Yes.
How's this?
Welcome to Big Time Radio, folks.
Well, Jeff, what I was saying is you could update that story if you wanted by making it a text message.
Okay. I apologize, but you're breaking up again. or still, I should say, you're coming through about every other syllable.
Oh.
You want to try it again? Say what you said before about a message?
I just wanted to say that you could update your story by making it a text message.
I suppose so. That might work. Yeah, but the truth of the matter is it had, and now you're coming through very clearly, by the way.
Okay.
It had other flaws to it as well, not least of which was the writer. but you're right. I then had the wonderful opportunity in terms of writing something that you talked about being affected by September 11th. I wrote a novel called Doc, which has never been published, and it actually is not bad, unlike the other one. And it involved tangentially, but importantly, the Robert Kennedy assassination.
Oh,
and,
my.
And when I was peddling it to publishers, and in those days most people didn't self-publish, but when I was peddling it to publishers, Oliver Stone came out with a movie called JFK, after which it was kind of like a dead field. And it's one of those things where if it was really important, I could revive that and try and get it out, or in fact self-publish it. But the motivation just hasn't been there. It's just that was something that was also affected by time, but not by technology, obviously.
I see. Yeah. Timing.
Yeah.
So the biggest question, though, the biggest question is: did you enjoy the writing? Did you enjoy writing fiction?
As you have, I think if it's something that, I wasn't intending to make the conversation about me. I should be pounding on the table and saying, listen, I'll ask the questions here. But in answer to your question, it's a joy. Generally, you've written because you were teaching English. You wrote a short story as essentially an exercise for yourself, but also a teaching tool for your class, and enjoyed it. I've done some of the most mundane writing, as I'm sure you've probably done sometimes, that is mundane subjects, something that may not have interested you. But the writing itself, I have to tell you, has always been something enjoyable.
Oh, great.
So, and I assume you've had the same kind of experience.
Oh, I love writing. It's such an exciting thing to do. You're totally in control of the whole universe. Whatever you want your characters to do or say, you can make them do it, though sometimes they will fight you. And you just can describe any situation and make anything happen that you want. It's just amazing. It's the total freedom and creativity of it that just is overwhelmingly fun.
Yeah. And if you can do something where you can actually make money doing it, or, you know, at least make something doing it.
Right. That can be the challenge.
Right, absolutely. But if you can do something where you're deriving at least part of your living from writing, then that makes it all the better. I've mentioned on the show before, I have a column in a magazine here in Arizona. I have a column in Scottsdale Health magazine. And if anyone is interested in seeing that, by the way, you can go to a website called allyouneedforhappiness.com. That's where the magazine is published, and my articles appear in there every month. But the point I was making is that is fun and it's interesting. It's 500 words a month approximately, and the point I'm making is just for anyone who wants to write, the best way to get published or to publish yourself or whatever it is and I'm not the first person to say it, is glue your backside to the chair and start writing, whether it's on a keyboard or, God forbid, a pen and paper.
That's absolutely right. You have to start, and you have to devote a lot of time to it. So if you don't enjoy it, don't do it. And if you do enjoy it, the time flies by.
That's right. You know, and you said something interesting. Well, you said a number of things that are interesting, but I mean just now. There is a writer whose work I always admired, a humorist that not too many people have heard of anymore, by the name of H. Allen Smith. And he talked about the fact that there are a lot of writers who talk about, and I know you've heard this before, writing is very easy. You sit down and you concentrate until beads of blood form on your forehead or something like that. And And he wrote, and I'm sure you agree, and that is, you know what, if it's that hard and that unpleasurable, why do it? There are lots of other things in life you can do. Nothing is, no one is requiring you to try to write for a living.
Exactly. Follow your bliss. Wherever it takes you, follow it.
Yeah. Or at least avoid the misery. Yeah.
Well, heavens, yes. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So the book you're working on now, on HCG, I don't know if you have a title for it yet.
I do. It's called The Easiest HCG Diet. The Easiest HCG Diet.
Right.
And that's because there are so many different forms of it, and I've been researching it for quite a while now. I'm pretty sure that I've worked out which method is the easiest.
Well, one thing is you're not getting shots. That makes life a lot easier for those of us who are needle phobic.
Yes, I get really queasy even if somebody else is going to inject me, you know, any kind of shot. I don't like it. I get squeamish. I can't watch them do it, and I could never do it to myself. So just knowing that it can be done orally, and people have said it's just as effective. People have tried both methods, and they say that the oral method is absolutely every bit as effective as the injection.
Yeah, first off, I was just going to share with you when my dog has to have a shot, I can't watch.
Oh.
Okay, so I have to turn the, I'll hold her so that they can, she's a little girl, but I'll hold her so they can give her the shot if necessary, but I can't actually watch the process. It's tough. And the other thing I was going to say is, you know, that, you know, a lot of people have found success doing it orally. I want you to know that I exercised great self-restraint when you said that. Didn't make
well,
a single
I'm sorry.
Joke. No.
I didn't mean to do a double entendre there.
No, I know you didn't. but you see.
Thank you for your restraint.
Yeah, thank you. You have to understand that you're dealing with someone who has a juvenile delinquent humor. And
well,
so you know when someone does something like
you're
that,
male.
So
yes.
Hard.
Yeah,
I was
going
to say there is something. Yeah, there is something to that. I'm sure you're right. As much as we try to avoid stereotyping and roles. There is something to the fact that men do seem to, you know, go for the gutter much more frequently.
I'm sorry, but I guess I feel that is true.
Yeah, me too.
Men. Oh, okay.
No, I have to agree. It's true. I mean, I don't know a lot of women who watch Beavis and Butthead, you know, on the occasions that it was on. You know, it just doesn't happen. I'm sure there are some, but I don't know very many. I don't know any. I do know a number of men, you know, who have watched it, including myself. So, you know, there you go. Anyway, we've only got about 2 minutes left, but I want to thank you for joining us because this really has been interesting on several levels. First, in terms of the writing and publishing aspect, and also your discussion about HCG as a method of dieting. As I said, you know, I'm a decent weight, but I've been much heavier, and I never used that particular method. But I know a number of people who use the HCG injection, and were losing weight and finding it to their liking. I mean, not to their liking in the sense that nobody likes shots and
effectiveness.
But in terms of its effectiveness, they really did real well. And I don't know because there are not people I associate with anymore, but I don't know if they are still experiencing the weight loss. And I assume it's not terribly difficult to keep it off afterwards.
Well, as long as you avoid MSG, that's true. That's actually correct.
Okay.
And also I want to thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure, and I hope you join us again. As I say, let me know when you get those books up on the web so that we can
That's wonderful.
At least, if not a full half hour, at least part of one so that we can let people know that.
That's wonderful. I would love to. I would love to.
Well,
thank you.
All right, Deanna, thanks very much. I'll let you go. We've got about a minute left, so I will let you go. And thanks again.
Okay, bye.
I'll look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that is essentially our show. We've got a few minutes or a few seconds left. I want to invite you to join us next week. Again, if you're interested in the newsletter, drop me a note at jb720@cox.net, and I will get it out to you. They're saying 60 seconds in my ear, which is good because if they said it in my nose, I probably wouldn't hear it, especially with the leech that's in there. So join us again, if you will. Tell your friends, warn your enemies. We'll look forward to hearing from you. And thanks very much. Have a great week. Bye-bye.